This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I'm Elizabeth Reese.
I'm Marjorie Punnett.
This is Best to the Nest, the podcast that's all about creating strong, comfortable, beautiful nests that prepare us to fly. It's also my favorite podcast of all the podcasts out there, Marjorie. And
your
in case you were
favorite?
Wondering where Best to the Nest ranks, it's high on the list.
Number one. Number one on your list. I love that. Elizabeth, I am alternately refreshed and exhausted at the same time.
Hmm.
Because I finished last night my final big paper for this semester. I have three more classes to finish my master's.
Wow.
And so I finished my big final paper in one class. I have two reflections left. But today, we're going to dig in a little bit to a paper that I wrote for another class, which was due 2 weeks ago, because I'm taking a class on nostalgia. And it's an 800-level seminar class, which just means there's a ton of writing, a ton of reading, but the professor's amazing. And the class, surprisingly, I was quite afraid of it, considering what had happened at Christmas when my husband passed. And
yeah.
The idea of nostalgia and digging back and looking back and examining that, I wasn't quite so sure if I should stay in the class. It ended up being strangely healing. But first, we want to thank a couple of special people before we start talking about that.
I'm definitely intrigued by this conversation. Let's thank our sponsors of Best to the Nest. I'd like to think that we're also their favorite podcast as well. First up, Pormois Climate Smart Skincare, the skincare that I love. This is the skincare regimen we both use, we both love. Boy, do I have friend after friend. They're toppling like dominoes, getting on the Pormois train, and I am here for it, guys. I'm loving the photos that you're sending me. It is spring, so it's a lovely time because Pormois is all about the climate. It's a nice time to switch your routine, too.
And it's affordable luxury skincare from France. Use code NEST, N-E-S-T. I always feel the need to spell NEST for
That's
an extra
good,
20%
though.
Off. A 100% money-back guarantee. Go to pourmoiskincare.com. That's P-O-U-R-M-O-I skincare.com.
Boy, and speaking of beautiful weather in the spring, let's thank our other sponsor of Best to the Nest, which is Visit Duluth. Many of you know I started my television career in Duluth. It has a real special place in my heart. And summer was certainly made for trips up Minnesota's North Shore. So this is the time to plan that weekend getaway, or even if you can get away during the week and you can go up and just experience the peace and the beauty that is Duluth, some of my favorite places to visit. You got to get a sandwich at Northern Water Smokehouse, and you've got to get some Wild State Cider. I'm just going to start shouting out places that I love
there you
in Duluth.
Go. That's awesome. That's
what
awesome.
What will your memories be made of? That's the question. You can find the cool side of summer with trip tips, inspiration, and lodging. VisitDuluth.com should be your first stop when you are planning your trip up Minnesota's North Shore. And you know, when we talk about planning trips, I mean, what are you doing the trips for? It's to make those memories, which of course is in line with what we're talking about, nostalgia. I love hearing that you were nervous about what that was going to open up for you.
Oh, yeah.
But then finding it healing makes me feel like this was very efficient because, and you know, I like efficiencies.
I know you do.
Because you had to pay for the class anyway, and you're going to have to pay for a therapist too if you don't work through it.
Yeah,
so now you killed two birds, one stone.
Yeah, but there's definitely, as my son keeps saying, there's still a therapist in my future. Grief is grief is hard. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. And when this, so my husband passed away on December 22nd of 2023. My classes started in January. There was no question that I was going to continue with school because I know myself well enough to know that my mind, if it's not busy, will collapse on itself. That would just be, I had to have something that could take my focus away from my grief. And I think that was really healthy for me. That's the way I function. Don't have any idea how other people deal with profound and deep sadness or grief. That's how I function. I've always been really good at compartmentalizing work. You're probably the same way. Growing up in newsrooms helps you do that because there's chaos around you and you have to learn how to focus. And so my head was a little bit in chaos, but if I had something to focus on, I could. But what was interesting is I had a class on nostalgia and Elizabeth, my other class was poetry.
Oh,
and I walked into the first day of class and the theme for the roughly, it was more complex than this, but roughly the theme of the poetry class was going to be death. And a wonderful professor, amazing. She's the poet laureate of the state of Kansas. Wonderful professor. And I sat in that classroom the first day and I was like, I cannot do. And I walked over to my advisor, tears streaming down my face. I can't do it. You have to find me a different class. Yeah. I mean, the love and the kindness of the professor, she's like, I got this. Like goes to his computer. He's like, how about illustration? I do a class in illustration. I'm like, that's so good.
Oh my gosh.
And so just the loveliest people who I feel like I'm a really strong and independent person, but what's been amazing is in my time of great weakness of just the net that just keeps, I mean, you included, of just this like net of love that just keeps me from crashing to the ground. And so I moved to another class and I hope again to take that poetry class someday. But I just, I mean, I was almost in tears five times in class and I thought, I cannot do this to these young people. I can't.
I love that that's where your mind goes. I can't do this. To these, you know, but I think there's a real strength in knowing your limit there.
Oh,
and really knowing. I mean, and then you knew, okay, this is where you're in this nostalgia class, and then it's the poetry, which, you know, I mean, I couldn't even handle a poetry class on anything because I sit there in poetry and think, can you all just say what you are meaning? Because I do not have the time nor the mental capacity to try to figure it out.
Let's be clear. Poetry is not efficient. It is not efficient.
Inefficient. And I cannot. I actually picked up a poetry book this weekend. I was at a store and it was poems of Mary Oliver. And I was thinking like, maybe this is something that I should be into. I opened one page. I read the page and I was like, peace freaking out, Mary. No.
No. I'm not doing it.
Doing it. Anywho. But I think that shows great strength to know.
Yeah.
You know, where...
Couldn't
where you are and what you can handle. I mean, that's like half the battle because people want to help and they want to do the right thing, but they can't if they don't know what's going on.
Right. And I can't demand that the whole theme of the class be changed for me. No. You know, no, that's not going to happen. So I just, but it was just, me walking into the advisor's office, it was a scene from a movie. I mean, honestly, it was so over the top, but I just couldn't not change it immediately and just move on. So, and the illustration class has just been mind expanding and amazing. So it worked out beautifully. But this nostalgia class was so interesting. And I won't go into the depths of the different kinds of nostalgia and all these other things, because some of the literature gets so complex. And some of it, to be honest, I would read it and I didn't even understand what they were talking about. So we're not going to go there. But I had to write a paper and we had a choice. We could either write an academic paper for this class or we could write a piece of public writing, something that we would want to be published. And so I wanted to write something about, you know, you have to figure out what your demographic is and who my audience would be. And my audience would be young parents for this paper. And so I'm not going to read the paper, obviously. But I found in doing the research, I found some things where it's like, and it's so funny, Elizabeth, when I come across things, it's like, oh my gosh, I have to tell Elizabeth. Like, that's my reaction. It's like, I have to tell Elizabeth about this.
This is so great. So I can get a mini master's without having to do any of the work. This is what I like.
A mini master's.
Yeah.
Efficient. So basically, in the paper, I talked about how we have this, every family has, if you're doing it right, every family is building memories,
yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. And if you're not, you should be. It's important. And because you want, basically what I talked about is you have to be able to, and I did not realize this when I was raising my own kids, that not only are you raising your children, you're having a childhood, you're also creating a parallel childhood. It's the childhood that they have that they're going to look back on as adults, and they're different.
Yeah. They like, are different.
Different. So what does that mean if you're a parent? It means that in a way, you're responsible. And some of the research I came across, there's a sociologist who calls it scaffolding, that you can take the memories that your children are having or events that your children have, and you have to help them scaffold those memories in a way that's healthy. And that becomes the foundation of their autobiographical consciousness. Right? So does this make sense so far?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The example I use in the paper is when Campbell was 5, he was attacked by fire ants. We lived in Georgia. Fire ants hurt. So he had stepped on an anthill on the playground. They swarmed his legs. He had sandals and he had shorts on, mm-hmm. of course, because he's in Atlanta. They swarmed his feet. They swarmed his legs. And he ran into the school and he somehow got his feet into the water fountain. And he got the ants off and he drowned the ants. So when I picked him up, the school didn't even call me. And there are kids that, you know, small toddlers can die from being attacked by fire ants. I mean, they're venomous and yeah. it hurts.
Yeah.
So the school didn't call. When I picked him up from school, he told me about it. I remember this. We talked about it for a long time. I talked about how proud I was of him, that he was so quick thinking and that he was so brave. And wasn't that amazing that he was able to do this and he was able to take care of himself? Without knowing it, I did what this doctor talks about, which is I scaffolded that memory for him. So instead of it being he was afraid and he'll never go back out on the playground and he's never going to, you know, all of these things, we scaffolded it that, oh, no, you knew what to do and you were brave. So as an adult, when he looks back on that moment nostalgically, the memory is he was brave. And so what I said is it's a cornerstone of his future self memory.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Totally does. That's so interesting. So it's like, it's about more than just the experience. You were helping him form the foundation of who he was in that moment so that he will draw on that later to remind himself of who he is in future moments.
Right. So it's, and that's the idea of like sort of two childhoods, that there's the one that's existing in real time, and then there's the one that builds what they call your autobiographical consciousness, which isn't necessarily, it's not that it's not reality, but it is a sense, it's a subjective sense of what is my place in the world? Who am I in the world? Who am I becoming?
Yeah, it's a perspective of yourself and your reality and your place in that reality versus just the reality. I mean, because the story is, I stepped on a pile of fire ants. They came up. It hurt like his L. I put my foot in the water. But it was really about, you know, quick thinking, bravery, and how to take control in moments of fear.
Right. And you think about all of the ways that we react to our children. And I could just as easily pull up a moment in my child's life where I scaffolded the memory in a way that was negative.
For sure.
I mean, this was not perfection, but that also becomes a cornerstone in their sense of future self. And so there's a real, and so in the point of the paper, I talk about like, this is a real inspiration to young parents that these moments are really about sitting down with your children and figuring out and it's not manipulating the moment, but figuring out what that moment means to them in a sense of future self.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the cool part. Here's the scary part.
Oh, geez. I knew you were going to go. Like, why do you do this? It was so great. I mean, we're like 15 minutes in. we cried. We got out of the death poetry class. I got to take some digs at poetry, which always makes me feel good. And then now here we are. It's like, here's for the love of God. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Hang with me.
I'm with you.
I know
you got
to go to work
you.
Today.
No, I've already been at work, and then I'll go again. It's fine.
And you'll go again. Yeah, that's right. You go four or five times a day. Okay. So in doing the research on the paper, I had to do some research into memory. Like, how does that work? And then I was really interested in sort of the nature of childhood is changing. We all know that. We hear about screen time all the time. This is the shocking part. And this is where I have to actually go to the research.
Ooh, what? And I'm gonna... Are you pulling out the research right now? Do you have a giant bin labeled research behind you? This is a legit podcast, people. This is not some rinky-dink operation.
This is the first real podcast we've done in 6 years. I've got research.
Oh my gosh. Because basically everything you post on social media, speaking of screen time, if you post like the sky is blue, there's going to be comments from people who are like, will you please share the peer-reviewed study confirming that the sky is blue? I'm like, for frick's sake, people, I am so... We are in this cultural, like, it must be backed up with a study, and it's like making me lose my mind anyway, but I am interested in your research.
Well, here's the thing about studies, and this is what my son was telling me, that statistically, how many studies are not really peer-reviewed that say they're peer-reviewed?
Right.
Yeah. So we can't even trust that. We just have to be careful with what we look at. But I trust the research that I put in this paper. So,
well, yeah, if you put it in your research bin, we're in. Let's do it.
Yeah, it's in my research bin. I like that. My big research bin. Okay, so there was a philosopher who wrote this piece in the Paris Review, which I loved. And this is a quote from him, which leads into the research. He said, today, children have become profane digital beings. The magical experience of the world has withered. Children hunt for information, their digital Easter eggs. And he was arguing that data is replacing stories. So kids are filling their heads with data, but they're not stringing it together in any sort of way that helps them. And so here's the research. So I wrote, and I'm just going to read this to the paper. Recent neuroscience research supports Hahn's concerns about contemporary children and the effects of excessive screen time. Identifying a disturbing trend, researcher Lori Manuel finds that some of these effects, this is excessive screen time, some of these effects are similar to those seen in adults with symptoms of mild cognitive impairment, the early stages of dementia.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Her team theorizes that excessive screen time may lead to difficulty creating new memories and difficulty remembering old ones. Studies also show that as children and adolescents begin to document their lives on their phones, they are less likely to remember the moments they record. They've essentially offloaded it. Mm-hmm. And I say this matters. And then I go on to say, if technology is the centrifugal force that pulls families apart, stories will be the centripetal force that pulls us back together. And so the point of the paper is that you have to have your family stories. You have to be able to tell your family stories. You have to pay attention to what's happening to your children when they're young, because they need to be able to draw back on that. And I had started the paper with a story that sort of institutionalized within our family lore. And there are so many in our family. And those are the stories that my sons are pulling now that bring them comfort in their in trying to get through the grief of their father's death.
Right.
So it's all about how we deal with nostalgia will have a direct effect on how we're able to cope as adults. So that's the crux of the paper. There you go.
I hope you got an A. Did you find out if you got an A yet on this paper?
I did.
What's the percentage? What is it? A 98? A 90? A 100, isn't it? It was a 100.
I'm not going to say.
You better say.
No.
Cripes.
But fascinating.
That means she got a 100, you guys. I just want you to know this is very good. I'm very impressed.
But
really like the topic of it. First of all, I think this is. Yes.
This is something that. How are your friends talking about this? I mean, how are they? It's an enormous responsibility when you think of parenting in this way.
Well, the collective conversation now is trying to push off screens as long as possible. This is what we're trying to do. And right. I am hopeful that more parents are getting on board with this, because I mean, I don't know if it's happening, but there's like this movement to try to, gosh, I should look it up because my girlfriend sent it to me. My friend, Mary, who's a nester. Hi, Mary. She's right. My college friend.
Hi, Mary.
She sent it. And because this is a podcast, I can look it up and we can put in some, you know, fun music or something. Here it is. So she sent me this thing and it says, this has been going all over around social media. The four new norms. Okay. This is what people are trying to kind of get on board with. The four new norms. One, no smartphones before high school. I mean, this is very revolutionary because right now, I mean, I know 9-year-olds who have iPhones.
Oh, no, 9-year-olds.
Not my 9-year-old, but other 9-year-olds. Right. Two, no social media before 16. Okay. So that's the other of the four new norms.
Yep.
Three, phone-free schools. And this is the biggest
100%.
Thing that, well, parents lose their minds about this, Marjorie, and we can discuss why. And then number four, more independence, free play, and responsibility in the real world. So why don't we delve into these for a second? Since I pulled up the information, my research bin is located within Instagram. Isn't that something?
That's usually where mine comes from. So
no, it's kind of upsetting. So no smartphones before high school. The idea is basic phones, flip phones, and Apple watches are fine. Millennials had flip phones and suffered no detrimental effects.
Yeah, that's easy.
There's a guy named Jonathan Haidt, who put this out. And then he has a hashtag, free the anxious generation. That's the hashtag.
I have the book right on my desk.
Really?
Yeah. I took it out last week from the library.
Oh.
And I have it on my it's a book.
Cool.
He's been making the rounds. This is a very big deal.
Okay.
What he's talking about.
This is the guy posting this. Oh, good.
Yeah, this is
so
great.
My research been on Instagram isn't so bad.
You are right on.
So I am here for this, the basic phone, flip phone, and Apple watches. Because my 9-year-old has one of those Gab watches. So it's not an Apple watch, it's a Gab watch. I will tell you, because people might ask, do you recommend the Gab watch? I don't really, because I think the hardware of it sucks. I have to use this crappy clamp to keep it attached to the charger to get it to charge. And so it's a junky wristband. I really wanted to love it. I wanted to share it from the rooftops. It was going to be great. And it only has prefabbed text messages. You can't like write something out or talk to it to say a text message. And I think that's annoying. So,
and I think on the Apple watches, I think you can get earlier generations pretty cheaply now.
Well, yeah.
Like if you want that. So
yeah, I think we're going to switch her to an Apple watch. I also love the idea of like the old school, like that, which they have new school versions of like the Motorola flip phones. And that's probably end up doing. They're great. The camera is the only thing, because I think kids like to take pictures, but I don't really want them sending pictures. So there you go.
I would not want the camera.
Yeah.
There's no need for it, really. And especially if you hear this research that once they're taking the pictures, they're offloading the memory.
Well, I know. And why don't I just get her a digital camera? Then she can just take pictures with it.
Right.
No social media before 16. He goes on to say social media isn't suitable for minors, and it certainly isn't suitable for early puberty. Let them get most of the way through puberty first. This is for sure. I don't even know. I mean, we'll see how I do, but I don't want to do social media when they're in my house. I don't want them to start building a social media presence until they're adults. But we'll see.
Well, it's tricky. It is also tricky because you're a public figure. And so they have to keep all their accounts private for sure.
Well, yeah. But
16, I think 16 is reasonable. Just under normal circumstances, I think 16 is reasonable.
Yeah.
I would prefer that they not do it till college, but I think I don't think I could have enforced that.
Well, plus there's also like the whole thing of, do you want them to be using it while you're supervising it? Just like, do you want them to only get a credit card when they're 18? And then it's like, hey, I don't have to show you my bills and here they go. Versus if you start when they're 16, you can go through it together.
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
All right. Okay, I'll back off. Next, phone-free schools.
Okay, why is this controversial?
Phones should be locked away in lockers or yonder pouches. That must be those pouches that they give you at comedy shows when they don't want you to record it. Have you ever had to put your phone in a thing at a comedy show? I had to do that at Bill Burr. They make you do that. For the duration of the school day, K through 12, not available during class or class breaks. Give them 6 to 7 hours of uninterrupted learning and social time. Now, I am totally for this, but you try to find a school that does this because parents don't want it. Because parents are so obsessed with communicating with their children all the time that they are nonstop texting them. Oh, did you forget this? Oh, I'll pick you up for practice. Oh, blah, blah, blah.
Leave and so the children be.
They don't do it. Now there is an argument, and I've been seeing this circulating too. There's an argument. Well, what if my child is in a school shooter situation?
Right.
I am not saying that's an unreasonable thing to be afraid of in today's day and age. Certainly not.
Right.
But what many like emergency crisis management experts will tell you is that your child is in a much safer position with a faculty member there telling them to be quiet and what to do and hide versus calling their parent in hysterics saying there's a shooter in the school. You know what I mean? Like, let's be real about how that goes. It's
and
not
I think
good
we have to
no matter what.
Yeah. And I think we have to, I mean, honestly, let's take that discussion off the table. Let's just take that one off the table because statistically, I hate the statistics. I'm not even going to go down the statistics road but let's just take that off the table because it's so emotionally complicated.
Yeah, it is. But I see where you're going with that. It's complicated because while it is a real fear and it has happened to real families and it is absolutely the most, in my opinion, terrible thing about American society today. Full stop right there.
It's a
I don't
horror.
Think there's anything worse. I do not think
it's
there's
horror.
Anything worse happening in our country. It is still a very minute chance that that will happen versus the damage that these researchers are saying is impacting your child when there's access to the phone nonstop. So,
and I just have to say, I had one paper left for this semester, one big paper left, and I turned it in last night. And I sent you a picture of my desk, which was just book chaos because
it
just
really
all
gives
the,
me anxiety. Like,
I'm sorry.
I am brought back to college and I like, I don't do well with this. No.
But what I found was, and I'm a 59-year-old woman who grew up without a cell phone, who knows how to exist, I thought, without a cell phone, because I was having trouble, because it was my last paper. I was crutching on my phone and it was such a distraction.
Yeah.
I literally had to take it, unplug it, put it downstairs in the other bedroom and just get it away from me. Because if it was next to my computer, the minute I would get stuck on an idea, I would pick it up.
You were coping. You were using the little dopamine hit to get through the hard thing.
To get through the hard thing. But what it does is it was completely fracturing my ability to have a long, sustained, critically thought through moment because I kept interrupting it. And that's the hard work. When you're trying to do a paper, you're trying to concentrate, you're trying to do a complex math problem, you're trying to do whatever. If the phone's right next to you, it's interrupting your ability to critically reason. It just is. And I experienced it and I was like, whoa, this is wild. I am not 16 and this is hard for me. And so I just think parents have to understand that, yes, if you want to talk to your, first of all, I think let your kids be, let them be without you for 8 hours. That's okay.
Yeah.
Like your voice doesn't have to be in their head. I really appreciated when my parents' voice wasn't in my head. I had that freedom growing up. But I think that aside, you're probably the least of what's going on in their phone during the day. And it is going to have an impact on how well they can learn. And it's hard enough already. Why would you want to make it harder?
Well,
so
plus,
I'm
100%
in favor of that.
Just like 100%. The information gathering and the taking pictures and sending stuff to other kids during the school day. I mean, it's a living nightmare. Like it should totally be off limits. I mean, you should be able to be in a safe place without feeling like you're going to be recorded and stuff like that in school. I mean,
when I taught the first semester I was here, I made everybody put their phones on the desk and down.
Yeah.
Mostly because I just didn't want I mean, I was teaching writing. It wasn't like anything controversial was going to happen in the class. But my image is my image.
Yeah.
I still feel strong. And that's just having, you know, been around media for so long.
I know.
I made them put their, like, they just put them on your desk, you know, just, and keep them, you know, don't
have
them in
your hands.
You could
get those special pouches and pass them out.
Yeah.
I don't know
yeah.
what, I got to dig into more at like my kid's school, what the phone policy is. Cause you know, my kid's school is K-8. So
right.
like the middle schoolers all have their phones. I don't know what's happening. Brittany has to keep her watch in her backpack, which is fine with me. Cause I just,
that's great.
She doesn't even really bring it to school. She maybe brings it to school one day a week. Like,
right.
Or if someone else is going to be picking her up besides me, like grandma or grandpa, then if something like if they got out of sync or something, I don't know.
So is the policy that the phones cannot come to school or they get locked up when they get to school? What is
he
recommending?
They should be locked away in lockers or those pouches for the duration of the school day is what this Jonathan Haidt says. Or Haidt. I don't know how to
okay.
say his name.
Interesting. Okay. I agree.
Give them
that.
6 to 7 hours of uninterrupted learning and social time. And yeah. then more, the last norm that he's pushing for, more independence, free play, and responsibility in the real world. Kids need unsupervised play, embodied activities, and age-appropriate risk-taking in order to learn independence and become self-governing. And that is so true. He says, if we implement these four norms, I'm confident we can reverse the youth mental health epidemic within a year or two. I would also say we need to focus on nutrient-dense foods in order to reduce that.
Yeah.
But I'm not a doctor.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just a parent and a wellness enthusiast who thinks that food-like substances don't belong in our bodies, nor should they be subsidized by our tax dollars, Marjorie Punnett. You want me to pull out tax dollars? I'll do it. I'm not afraid.
Man, you are feisty today. You are
I'm feisty
very,
every
feisty.
Day.
I love it. You're feisty
every day. I know.
I'm feisty
every day. But I think these are really good. You know, this is an interesting, as you talk about memories, though, this brought up for me a recent real world example. So last weekend, Bernie's very into gymnastics and she's having a lot of fun with it. I was also, as you were talking about Campbell and that fire ant situation, thinking about how she really struggled in this last session of gymnastics. She moved levels. So she moved up a level and she moved into a level where, frankly, she didn't really like jive with the girls that were in the class. It was a small class. And then
right.
the coaches at first seemed really tough on her. And so we had some days where she was going to gymnastics and she was like sobbing. And I had to make those decisions as a mom. Is this a moment when I push or is this a moment when I let her
right.
quit? And
right.
my thought was, and how I kind of framed it was, if you don't want to do gymnastics, you don't have to. But I am locked into paying for this for 6 weeks after we tell them that we're done. We have to pay for it for 6 weeks, which means we have to continue for those 6 weeks to honor
right.
the commitment of what we've invested in.
Oh,
like,
I like
we're
that.
Not just quitting and wasting our money.
I like that.
So that's sort of how I've like compromised. And then every week we would be like, is this the week that you want to tell them that you're done? And then it would be, okay, no, even if she was crying. Because it's also, you're going to have to get used to a tougher coach. You might be
right.
on a team where you don't love the other girls. There, you know, this, you might be frustrated by not being able to master a skill. And I want her to be able to know her own strength and moving through those things. And at the same time, I don't want to push her. Anyway, she gets through it. I was very proud of her for how she like handled it. She mustered up the strength. She kept going back even when she was feeling like it was hard. And she was really being thoughtful about, do I love gymnastics enough to go through this hard part of it? So we get to the end of the session and there's like this gymnastic show and you go there and she does a little floor routine. They like show off their skills. So she does
right.
a thing on the beam. She does a thing on the bars.
Aww.
And Jay couldn't be there because Jay was out of town. We didn't know when the show was going to be. And he had a trip
right.
Sunday to Tuesday. So Jay wants videos of this because he's not there. And so I am like consciously trying. I do not want to experience my life through looking at it through my phone. I want
right.
to be in the moment watching her while at the same time, I want to be capturing this moment to be able to send to my husband who really wanted to be there.
Right.
And what a beautiful thing about technology that you can record it and send it to him and he can feel like he was there and then he can come home and watch the videos with her and talk to her about it.
Right.
And it's this like wonderful connection. But I don't want his connection to the moment to ruin my experience of the moment. Right. So I'm like, so I'm sitting there, and I'm sure a lot of parents have been like this, and I'm like shooting video of it, and I'm looking at the screen to make sure she's in the shot, and then I'm trying to consciously look at her in real time while having my eyes pulled to make sure that like, oh, did I move my, oh, she moved down the beam. I need to shift the phone.
Right, right.
And it was very irritating. And I did not know how to do that. So
a tripod would have been your best friend.
A tripod. I am going to be a loser who brings a freaking tripod to gymnastics. Is that what you're telling me?
I think if you want to experience both, you could probably use a tripod with a wide shot. And then you'd capture the moment.
I cannot. Like, and then the next, I can't. That is where I have to draw
somebody.
The line. Anyway, I'm going to have to hire somebody.
We want to thank our sponsors. Of course, Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare. It is affordable luxury skincare from France. The Climate Smart Rotating System is customized to where you live. That means Pour Moi is giving your skin what it needs to stay hydrated and healthy. I wake up in the morning and my skin feels so soft and glowy and hydrated. I just love it.
I think that's the biggest difference, Marjorie, that I notice with Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare. I've been using this skincare line for 3 years. It's unlike anything else. I do not have days where I wake up and my skin is tight or oily because my skin is supported and doing exactly what it needs to do to fit with the environment that it's in. Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare is proven for anti-aging results. Pour Moi creams and serums are clean, fragrance, and cruelty-free. And we've got a discount for you. Use the code NEST. You'll get an extra 20% off with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to PourMoiSkincare.com. That's PourMoiSkincare.com. And visit Duluth.com. Thanks to them for sponsoring Best to the Nest. Oh my gosh, how much do I love Duluth? It is just one of my favorite places. Did you all know my first television job was in Duluth, Minnesota? I love visiting. It brings back so many memories. And anytime you can spend time in Duluth or up the North Shore, there's just something magical and majestic about it. When we talk about on Best to the Nest, just figuring out how to take a breather and how to slow down and be intentional. I find that there are fewer places that are more perfect for that than Duluth. And visitduluth.com is the perfect resource for you to plan your trip. Summer is coming up, and summer was made for trips up the North Shore. What will your memories be made of? That's a great question. You can find the cool side of summer with trip tips, inspiration, and lodging. You can get your whole trip planned at visitduluth.com.
I love that. I love Duluth. Beautiful, beautiful country.
But then I was talking to a friend recently too.
But I get what you're saying.
It's a fine line.
It is. It is a very fine line. And
because
it is,
you're constantly trying to use the technology to benefit you while not ruining you. It's very tricky.
Right, right. But you were saying you have a friend.
Well, then I was talking with a friend she and her husband are friends of ours. Our husbands are very good friends. And they golf together. And so we ran into each other. We ended up having dinner with them. And she was telling me about her kids are grown. Her kids are like, they're younger than yours. They're in college. But she was telling me how uncomfortable it makes her. And I'd never heard anyone say this. She's an artist, by the way. Artists are sensitive humans, and they have a fascinating way of looking at the world. And so I always like digging into what they're doing. She was telling me how uncomfortable it makes her to watch videos and hear her boys' voices when they were young, because she is convinced that it is unnatural to do so. That in the whole scope of human history, we have never been able to like listen back to, you know, historically speaking, however long we've been able to listen back to recordings,
right,
has not been that long when it comes to the whole scheme of human history. That us listening back to our kids' voices when they were young, that it messes with your ability to appreciate them for who they are now, and that that amount of nostalgia is too much for her to be able to handle. I don't know that I agree with that. I do know of a lot of parents who like will talk about, you know, going down that memory lane of watching videos of their kids when they're young and just like sobbing because it's like you miss it so much. And are we really meant to miss it that much? Are we meant for it to live in our minds as this like realistic idea of what it was, which was both beautiful and difficult? Mm-hmm. But when you see it, when you see your children as little toddlers and then you hear their voices, are you inclined to romanticize too much of what that was? And then in turn, not appreciate where you are today. I don't know. I'm just bringing up the point because I've never heard anyone say that until she told me that. And I've been thinking about it ever since.
What's interesting about that is I think there's an element. I know this from my own looking back when I look at the kids, and I don't have a lot of home movies of the kids. I mean, the video, right. I have like four cameras, you know, video cameras from that era. I didn't use them much.
Yeah.
Which I kind of regret. And then I kind of don't. I have some when they were very small. And sometimes when I look at those, particularly when they were babies, it makes me sad.
Yeah.
And it makes me sad because I was in such a state about my own situation.
Right.
Oh my God, my career. What am I doing to my career? Am I spending, you know, all of that chatter. So it makes me, I'm forced to acknowledge my own immaturity in that moment. And as a 59-year-old of realizing how lucky I was to have had the life that I had, and I wish I hadn't worried about it so much in my 20s.
But what
that everything
but
worked
then
out
you
just
can't
fine.
Change that. Yeah, but there's nothing you can do. So like, is there a point to putting yourself through that then?
Of watching
I think
those
that
old
might,
movies?
Yeah, I mean, I think that might be my friend Molly's, her point is that it's like, that you're not meant to have that human experience. That now, like, you get hard on yourself for what you missed. There's absolutely nothing you can do to change how you were. You were never able to go back and learn that lesson. And frankly, every mother you know who's in the thick of it, even when you tell them, I know you're in the thick of it, but I promise you, you're going to come out on the other side. It doesn't even help those women in that moment.
No. I mean, I could probably watch them now. It was harder 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Now I'm in a very different place. I think pretty much once I crossed into my late 50s, I was in a very different place because I sort of look back. I mean, in my head, I sort of retired at 50. I didn't. I kept working. That's when I started producing TV again. But in my head, I retired from the angst of what will happen to me. Like, what will I be? What will I do? I just did. After I turned 50, I was just like, oh, this is fun. I'll do this for a while. Yeah. And then this is fun and I'll do this for a while. As opposed to that obsession of what will become of me? Will we be okay? Will we? And all of that in my 50s just went away in sort of that cliche way that people say that it does, but it did. And so I think it would be easier for me in that decade than it was like in my 40s or even, it's weird. It's weird how memory works. It's weird how nostalgia works. But to your friend's point, I totally get what she's saying.
Yeah.
Because it can drum up some very strange feelings. I mean, right now, I was looking for something. Some of the students here at K-State for their capstone project, they're doing a documentary about my husband and what he meant to the students. And it's very sweet. And they had asked if I would do an interview. And I had agreed to do it. And then the night before, I thought, no. I'm not. It doesn't need me. I mean, then I started thinking like a producer. It absolutely doesn't need my grief. It doesn't, if it's about the students, if it's about the university, there are enough people that they can interview. Ian had a professor that was a very good friend of his. That makes more sense to me. I don't want to mind my pain. I can't. I just can't.
Yeah.
And so I went to the interview and I said, you know, I was a former TV producer. I understand what I'm about to do to you, but I can't do the interview. But I can sit with you. I can talk to you. I can give you background. I can tell you anything you need to do, but I do not need to be on camera. And so they emailed back at some point and they're like, hey, we just need some gaps filled in his career and things. And so I was like, I did that. And I sent them a timeline of his career. And then I sussed around and I said, you know, go to YouTube. There's a lot about my husband on YouTube. You know, just go and you can find some things there. And so when I was doing that, I found a story and it hadn't popped up in a long time that the Hallmark Channel had done on our family.
Oh.
When we first started doing the show, because when we first started doing the show together, it was really unique because I was doing it from home.
Yeah.
And so the story was all about how this, you know, this family has made a way to integrate family and all of these things. And so this story is very sweet. They did a very nice job, but the boys are young. there's a lot of Ian in the interview. And so I sent it to one of my sons and not the other, because one of them nostalgically is in a place where he could handle that. And the other one, I thought, he doesn't want to see this right now.
Yeah.
Because for the exact reasons that you're talking about, it's like that seeing your father up and walking and talking about being a father and how much he loves his kids and this is why he's doing. You can either take that in the moment or you can't. Mm-hmm. It was hard for me to watch. And so I think that that's the weird play in nostalgia. And that, you know, so it goes back to a lot of things about how we build lives for our children, how we scaffold the memories, how we shepherd them into adulthood so that when they do look back, and will they want to look back on all those pictures and all those movies? Some yes, some no. It's complicated. Yeah,
it is complicated. But I think when we enter screens into the conversation, that gets even more complicated, because when you said that thing about how once it's in your phone, how like once you've taken a picture of it, you've offloaded the memory.
Right.
I immediately thought of one place, parking ramps. And here's why, Marjorie, because every time I go into a parking ramp, I take a picture of where I have parked.
Yes. Yes.
And then I immediately do not remember where I have parked. It is gone from my brain. The location of my vehicle is gone completely. And the only way that it comes back is when I open my phone and go back and go, oh, I'm on level 4 in the blue section. And then I remember. And so I know that sounds so silly that it's your parking ramps, but it is like, if you're taking a picture of it, could you be intentional in that moment at also looking at what you're taking the photo of for? Like, could you find that balance where you're taking the picture quick, putting the phone down, and then really looking at what you're taking the photo of, or vice versa? And I think that might need to be part of the, I mean, I don't care about the parking ramp. I don't need to remember
things
I want to remember.
I would argue in that I think we don't need so many pictures.
Yeah.
Put the phone down. Leave the phone behind. Just leave it behind. I mean, you talk about going on walks for your kids. Don't bring the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Don't bring the phone. And I think that's a really hard thing for people to, and I walk almost every day now, and I used to bring my phone. I don't anymore. I just leave it. I leave it behind. We don't need every moment documented. We don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think there are some special things that, and I think you're talking about getting the gymnastics routine, you know, spring sings, those kind of things with your kids. Yeah, I mean, you'll want a little piece of that, of course. But do you need to have, for the everyday moments, do you need to be documenting those so much? I don't think so. And part of the crux of the paper too, and really what they're finding in the research, is this idea of connection. And so when you talk about screen time, when you talk about phones, when you talk about all those things, what kids will remember and what they'll feel and what will sustain them as adults are the connections that they've made within their family.
Yeah.
So if your kids, or with toys, or with books, or with those kinds of things, it is hard to imagine looking back on your childhood nostalgically and feeling all warm and fuzzy about screen time.
Yeah.
I don't know. Although I have a child that might feel quite nostalgic about Pokemon. But Pokemon was books, Pokemon was cards, Pokemon was trading, Pokemon was...
I do feel nostalgic so about gathering around the television and watching Harry and the Hendersons together. I loved that movie.
But what makes it special? What made that special?
That was like the only VHS tape that we had, but it was about watching it together. I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah.
You're right.
There it is. Yeah.
I love TV. I work in TV. I would love people to keep watching it. It would be great because I need some money. So keep watching television regularly. I would like to stay gainfully employed in it. But
money.
The connection is totally different when you're experiencing something together versus sitting isolated on your screen scrolling mindlessly.
Right.
Yeah. It's very true. This was good. I'm so glad that you have taken this class and that you're the one that took the class and I didn't have to. And then I just
I give you
learned
an A.
about it from you.
I give
oh
you
my
an
gosh.
A. It's just that easy to get your mini masters.
Except.
You get an A in seminar 825ZA.
Totally. You get took an 800 level class. I didn't even know they made them that high.
They do.
It's really great.
Yeah.
I love it, Marjorie. I love our chats. I really do. This is why I said at the beginning, this is my favorite podcast, and that holds firm even at the end of this one.
Thank God. If you're enjoying this podcast, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and give us a review at Apple Podcasts. And a quick thank you, or actually a slow thank you. I'm going to take my time in this thank you.
Yeah, you can.
To all the nesters that have written to me. The notes are so kind and they're filled with such lovely expressions of love to my family. I am so, so grateful. I am making my way through them. I can only do a couple a day for obvious reasons, but they bring me, they're just very kind. And so many of you are writing about your funny and very poignant memories of my husband, which also is quite sweet. I want to say, though, yesterday I opened a package from Carla. I won't use her last name. And she wrote a 4-page letter about all of her memories of Ian and the many times that she met him at all of the Minnesota State Fairs. It was so sweet. It was just so sweet. And the amount of time she took to do that. And then with it, she included a little photo album of so many of my appearances with my husband. So when we'd be at the Minnesota State Fair, when we'd be up on the stage, Project Down and Dirty, for people who listen to my talk, they know what Project Down and Dirty is. Mm-hmm. And things I hadn't seen before, which, oh, where did it go?
Is it in your research bin or where?
It's not in my research bin, but it's this cute sort of nostalgic looking retro photo album. So a little photo album, but she had included, so at the radio station, they do show cards, which are basically when you're at an event, you can hand people a card that says the radio station and it's got your face on it. And I didn't even remember we had done a show card when the station was FM 107 in the early days.
Yeah.
And the show used to be called A Balanced Breakfast, which I didn't remember that either.
Really?
A Balanced Breakfast with Ian and Marjorie. And the tag was, life would be so much easier if you would just follow my script, which is what I used to say to Ian.
Oh my gosh.
Forgotten all of that. So Carla, thank you. That was a good memory. And I will scaffold it appropriately.
That's a really good saying. I would like that on a
mug. I was pretty proud of that one.
My producers would love that because they would like to say that to me.
Exactly.
Oh, Marjorie, that's so great. I love that. Wonderful. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at Best to the Nest. Go to besttothenest.com. We have a cute little website. And fun fact, my friends, we are now on YouTube. The videos are coming soon. We promise. Subscribe today. We are the podcast that brings you home.